So today's movie in the Summer Blockbuster Sermon Series is Mel Brooks' farce, The Producers. How many people have seen The Producers? Okay, so 10 of us, okay. Well, then I better give you a little backstory. And as you can see from this, it's over 50 years old. So again, I feel like, spoiler alert, it's all fair game. If you haven't seen it by now, that's okay. So Zero Mostel, there sitting in the suit on the left, is a famous Broadway producer, but he's down on his luck. He's produced a string of flops, and he's desperately trying to still be a producer. Mostly, he's desperately trying to convince little old ladies to back his almost non-existent plays just so he can have an income. Well, one day, while he's in the midst of that process, Gene Wilder, the nebbish accountant, Leo Bloom, comes in to do his books. And he discovers there's an error in his books. And he doesn't know what to do with it because Max Bialystock, that's who Zero plays, the producer had taken in more money in investments for his last play than he had actually spent on it. Of course, his last play was a flop, so nobody expected it to earn any money. So nobody was bothering him about profits, about their share. And Bialystock said, just hide it somewhere. Nobody wants that money. And the truth was, he'd already spent it anyway. Well, then the nebbish little Leo Bloom has a brilliant idea. He says that under the right circumstances, a producer could make more money with a flop than with a hit. The idea being that the producer could raise much more money than he needed, and then if the play was a flop, nobody would expect any profits, and so the producer could just pocket them. And Bialystock, the great Broadway producer that he is, recognizes the brilliance of the idea, of the scheme. And so he sets about to raise a bunch of money for the worst play he can imagine to produce. And he and Bloom go into business together, and they look for the worst play they can find. And they find one, the title of which is Springtime for Hitler. It's a love story between the Führer of Germany, the Third Reich, and his girlfriend, Eva Braun, written by a Nazi sympathizer, somebody who knew the Führer personally. They love it. Nobody will ever go to see this. But they go further. Not only do they want it to be the worst script they can find, they want to hire the worst director and the worst cast to put this on. And so they find a lunatic of a director. They cast a hippie stoner as Hitler. And then they proceed to sell, I believe Bloom at one point says, 25,000% of the production. You put in your investment, you expect to get 10% of the profits. Well, a lot of people put in expecting 10 or 20 or 30 or 50% of the profits. 25% of the, $1 million they raise. And the goal is that this production will close on opening night. Because the director believes that Springtime for Hitler can't just be a play. It has to be a musical. It's a farce, right? It's a farce. It's about the lunacy of show business, and it's also about kind of making fun of the Nazis. You may have presumed by their last names, Max Bialystock and Leopold Bloom, and you may know Mel Brooks, they're all Jewish. And so in some ways, and Mel Brooks has said this for decades now, that one of the best ways to belittle an opponent is to make fun of them. And to make so much fun of them that people can't imagine doing anything but making fun of them. That's the farce of the movie, right? And that seems to be the lesson, belittling the Nazis and a little bit belittling the whole showbiz process. There's not a lot of farce in the Bible, I'll be honest with you, but there's some. There's some. I mean, we've been carefully conditioned as people of faith to not laugh in church. I mean, because it's God and it's serious. God is about serious stuff. And so, and we even do that in our own devotional time. I mean, we read the Bible and it's serious stuff. And if we don't think it's serious stuff, we read it again and say, no, this is really serious stuff. And so, for example, when we hear about an erstwhile prophet who runs away from God and gets swallowed by a ginormous fish, we think, this is very serious stuff. It's absurd. What are you talking about? He got swallowed by a fish. What happened? Has that ever happened to you? I mean, that's blatantly preposterous. And in fact, I think the whole book of Jonah, for example, is farce. There's a lot of preposterous stuff in Jonah. And maybe one of these days we'll do a series on Jonah and dig into it a little, and we can look at some of the humor in Jonah and the point that it's making. Because that's the thing about farce, it also makes a point. I didn't want to talk so much about Jonah this morning, so I picked the other farce that I love in the Bible, which is the farce of the Ark of the Covenant and the Philistine god Dagon. You are excused if you've never heard this story preached on in the Bible or in a Sunday morning, because I'll be honest, I don't think it comes up in the lectionary, and most preachers are not in any hurry to preach on it because it's just weird, right? And also because we're all afraid to laugh in church. I mean, not only we'd be laughing at the Bible, but we'd be laughing in the sanctuary on Sunday morning with communion on the table ready to go. That's against so much of what we are about sometimes as Christians. And I know we laugh in this sanctuary, and that's a good thing, but we still, there's a part of us that's like, this is really serious. Well, this is the serious story that's in the Bible that I read this morning. I'll give you a little more context. The Philistines had conquered, had defeated the Jewish army, and captured the Ark of the Covenant. Remember the Ark of the Covenant? I mean, speak of a different movie. You've all seen the Ten Commandments, right? You know, Cecil B. DeMille takes Moses, Charlton Heston up on the mountain, and he gets the two tablets. Actually, he throws those away because they've built an idol, and he goes back and gets two more tablets. And they put it in this ark, this large golden-covered box that by tradition is thought to be the seat of God, the throne of God. And so they carry the Ark of the Covenant with them wherever they go, including into battle, because they think God is on their side. God will not let them be defeated. Well, the Philistines defeat them, and they capture the Ark of the Covenant. And they consider it a prize of war, and they carry it back with great pride and pomp, I'm sure, and they take it to their temple, to the god Dagon. Because that's what you do when you beat somebody. You take prizes, and you parade them back and say, look how big and powerful and strong we are. Look how our God has favored us. We're the winners. We're the best. Yay, God. So they put the Ark of the Covenant in the temple. And the next morning, the statue of Dagon is prostrate on the ground in front of the Ark of the Covenant. Okay, you're all too serious. Hang on. The next morning... the next morning, the statue of Dagon is lying in front of the Ark of the Covenant. Which, by the way, is ridiculous and slightly offensive if you worship the god Dagon. Because gods don't bow down to anything, right? That's the point. It is funny. Well, there might have been a little earthquake. Dagon might have been trying to move pedestals and he slipped. I don't know. So they put him back up where he belongs and they don't think anything more about it. You know, one time it can happen. The next morning, to make it perfectly clear, this was not an accident. Dagon, I'm not going to carry this one out because it'd be a little more gruesome. Dagon is on the ground in front of the Ark of the Covenant. His head's broken off. His arms have broken off. It's like the Velo de Milo, the Venus de Milo, if the Venus de Milo had no head and no arms. Okay? And in fact, this is only the tip of the iceberg. The Philistine people have nothing but problems when the Ark of the Covenant is in their possession. And in fact, it becomes a hot potato. And yeah, there's a lot of gruesomeness about disease and death, but then they try to give it away. I mean, I don't want it. Do you want it? I don't want it. Do you want it? Do you want it? I don't want it. Why did you give it to me? Get it out of here. That's the story. By the way, the next chapter, it comes back to Israel. They don't want it either anymore because they're terrified of all these stories they've heard about. It will be a generation before the Israelites know what to do with the Ark of the Covenant because of this. Okay? But that's for the future. That's for another time. So what's the point? Well, kind of like Mel Brooks's point. You think the god Dagon is so powerful and has blessed the Philistines and is mightier than the God of Israel? Joke's on you. Right? Basically, that's the farce. The god gets toppled. The god gets decapitated. Yeah. All the people that claim this is a prize get struck down by the true God, the powerful God. And it's so obvious to everybody. The Philistines give it back. The Philistines don't believe in the God of Israel. They think it's a trophy. Going back to the Nazis, you know, World War II, people would defeat, and if there were leftover Lugers or battlements or battle flags, Allied forces claimed them as prizes of war. And some of them have been brought back to this country and are in attics or living rooms or basements or museums. Right? This was a prize of war because they were the winners. And it turns out they didn't actually want what they had won. They spent years trying to figure out, what did we do wrong? I mean, we went into battle, we defeated them, we claimed it. That should be the end of the story. But it's not, because God's involved. And the point of the story is not the Philistines beating the Israelites, but what, of course, happens next to the Israelites. The opposite kind of happens in the producers. So Bialystok and Bloom, they put together this production of Springtime for Hitler with its opening number, called appropriately, Springtime for Hitler, which is just as garish and offensive as you can imagine. Or maybe even more garish and offensive than you could imagine if you don't imagine such things, with dancing stormtroopers in an Esther Williams moving swastika. I'm not kidding. It is over the top. And the response of the audience is they all just stare at the stage. Nobody applauds. There is utter silence when they finish this big production number. They all just stare. And people start to get up and leave because they're so offended. So far, so good for Bialystok and Bloom.
Yeah.
But then hippie dippy Hitler comes on stage. And he's off his rocker. He's totally clueless, and he's waving his arms around, and he's just kind of, what are we going to do next? And he's absurd. He's more absurd than the opening number was. And the remaining audience starts to laugh because he's so ridiculous. And by intermission, they come out saying this is the greatest play they've ever seen because it's so funny, because it's making so much fun of the little dictator. The mustached Fuhrer. It's going to run for years. Bialystok and Bloom are so beside themselves and terrified they're going to go to prison, not to mention the Nazi sympathizer who is in the audience who wants to kill everybody because they're At one point, he comes on the stage and he said, "My Fuhrer never said that. He never said this. He never said this baby. What's this baby? The Fuhrer never said baby." So it gets more and more outlandish. But my favorite thing is when Bialystok finally, he runs through everything and he said, "We did it all right. We found the worst play we could find. We found the worst director on Broadway. We found the worst cast, including an actor who had never acted before to play the lead. Where did we go right?" Where did we go right? And I think that's the other lesson of farce and humor in our lives of faith. There are instances in the Bible where God laughs at people for their shortcomings, their misdeeds, their misguided and wayward ways. But I think sometimes God probably chuckles at you and me for the great plans that we come up with, including sometimes the great devious plans that we come up with. And I know we're all people of faith, and so we're not going to admit to coming up with devious plans. I mean, I hope you've never tried to scam a bunch of people out of a lot of money. But perhaps an example that might be closer to home. You know, there's a conversation you know you ought to have with somebody, but you don't want to have it, and so you're trying to figure out the best way to get out of it. No? No, never? Just me?
No.
You know? Or there's the potential for conflict, maybe with your boss or your spouse or your, and you just, you're trying to find that eye through the needle, right? To avoid it. And sometimes we do. In my experience, usually I don't. Usually it comes up anyway. In a different way than I'd planned and hoped. Amazingly, sometimes, despite my best, worst efforts, it works out okay. No, yes, my best, worst efforts. That's what this movie is showing, right? Best, worst efforts. Where did they go right? The movie does a great job of showing how hard they work to find the absolute worst people. But there's one problem with all these worst people they find. They don't know they're the worst. The German sympathizer believes it's the greatest play ever written. The lunatic director believes he is the greatest director of all time. And the hippy-dippy Nazi playing Hitler player, well, he's just happy to be there. He's happy to be anywhere, I guess. They don't know. They don't know they're funny. They don't know they're ridiculous. They believe in what they're doing. They go out and do the best job they can. And in spite of themselves, people react to it. You know, and sometimes I think that's what our lives of faith are like. You know, as a preacher, I'm supposed to tell you to follow the straight and narrow path. I'm supposed to tell you that, I mean, Paul says, "Be ye perfect as our Father in heaven is perfect." Sorry. "Be ye perfect as our Father in heaven is perfect." But the truth is, we're not none of us, not any of us perfect. And even getting to this place this day, where we're worshiping God in this way, there's been a lot of mistakes along the path. And a lot of things that in spite of our best, worst, or best, mediocre, or just oblivious efforts, have brought us here, into the relationship we have with God. And my hunch is, if you're honest about it and you look back in the past, there are some things that you shake your heads at, right? I can't believe I did that. I can't believe that turned out better than it had any right to. And when you get bold enough to tell others about it, My hunch is you'll laugh about it. And you'll tell it as a funny story. You'll never believe, I don't believe, that it worked out like this. And you'll laugh about it. Because at the end of the day, it ended out well. I mean, it's like the ancient Greeks, that tragedy is when it ends up badly and comedy is when it ends up well. And it tends to be when it ends up well, we smile. We laugh, even if we don't understand quite how all's well that ends well. We might as well quote Shakespeare too. We need to laugh more in church. Because there's a lot of funny parts in our lives. There's a lot of serious stuff in our lives too, but there's a lot of funny stuff if you look back at it. A lot of stuff that we just can't believe we were so bullheaded or blindheaded or whatever. And a bunch of stuff, I imagine, that we can't believe we were so fortunate, so blessed about the ways it worked. That's enough for today about why and how we can laugh with the Bible, not at the Bible so much, but with the Bible. Laugh and not so much at God, but maybe with God. Maybe even be okay with the idea that God might laugh with us. Next week, we'll continue. We'll look at a charismatic leader, and we'll consider what makes a good leader after we look at the movie Patton. So, questions or answers before we move on to communion? Well, we've got to open the doors of the church. Questions or answers before we open the doors of the church? Yes, sir. I forgot my microphone. Hang on. I have one. I wear it so I don't lose it. But why don't you use this one?
I noticed a parallel. I had never seen the movie before, mm-hmm. and I had never heard that story before. Mm-hmm. So both were really interesting this week to contemplate.
Good.
A parallel that I thought of as you were talking between the audience's reaction to the opening number had to be the same reaction that the priest had walking into the temple the next morning.
Absolutely.
Just flabbergasted, just, what? And then by the end of the opening number, the audience is just beside themselves.
Offended,
just
yeah.
Don't know what to say or do.
Yeah.
It had to be the reaction that the priest had the second day.
Yeah.
I can't believe that this happened.
Right.
It's just crazy. This is nuts.
Right.
This in no possible way could ever happen.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. And so then, and the point of that is then for us to then try to wrap our heads around that mystery of, okay, if that's the reaction, why is it that this can't possibly happen, and why is it that it did happen? It's for us to kind of, it becomes a little mystery for us to unravel. Right? I think. Okay, Gene, you did not bring your little blue blankie, which I'm very sad about, but...
Well, I just wanted to say, I think we do laugh in this church.
We do, we do.
And we laugh when we laugh in Bible study.
Yep.
We laugh in CWF.
Mm-hmm.
I think I don't know what the word is, but what?
She said very funny.
We're very funny. Well, that's, yes.
But I think we enjoy, and we're not serious Christians that think, I don't know.
No.
We're just different, I think, than most people might.
I hope so.
Us. And I don't know about other churches, but
yeah,
we're pretty loose. And I think, well, yeah, you know.
That has a variety of meanings, Gene.
Yeah, well, they had
Ula. That's right. I tried to steer clear of Ula, but, you know.
Anyway, I'm glad that we're like this.
I am, too.
And I wanted to say.
I am, too. And if you got my video message this week, one of the things I'll come to you right now. One of the things.
Elder in the church wear this shirt.
Well, we've been meaning to talk to you about that, Neil.
I was reminded of the Indiana Jones movie.
Yes, the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yes.
That's right. Part of that movie is very funny, too, and very scary all at the same time. And it's also about making fun of Nazis, so it's a twofer. It's a twofer. If you saw my video message on Friday when it came out, I mean, that's the question I tried to answer, or at least ponder, is does God laugh? Right? Does God laugh? Because I'll be honest, when I was growing up, I couldn't imagine God laughing. God seemed very, very serious.
Yep.
Very serious. I mean, but the deeper my relationship with God gets, and the more I understand that God isn't about creating a kind of metropolis-like army of just unthinking, unblinking stormtroopers that follow God's every command, but rather wants relationships with other people, the more I think that God isn't so much worried about being a taskmaster or a disciplinarian, but rather that God is more like a host. God is like somebody, and Jesus even told a story like this, right? God is like somebody who throws a big party and wants people to come. And when people don't come, that host says, well, it's too empty in here, and invites other people. And it doesn't say so in the Bible, but I can only imagine they're happy to be there. There's good food and probably good wine on the table. And there's a lot of them there, and they're probably telling jokes. And I imagine the host looks at all those people, and they're happy, and the host is happy. Because when you've been a host or a hostess, what do you want for your guests? You want them to have a good time. And if they have a good time, if they're enjoying the food, if they're enjoying the other people that are there, you're enjoying it too, right? How could it be different than that for God? Don't you think God wants the creation to work and the creatures in the creation, including you and me, to be happy and fulfilled? And on the days when we are, don't you think God smiles? Anyway, what else? Elaine, please. Go for. Are you going to sing Springtime Freightler? Okay.
When I was watching your video,
oh yes,
the thing that came to my mind, how could God have created all the animals on the earth and not had a sense of humor?
Right. Right. Giraffes and rhinoceroses and hippopotamuses. Yes. Huh?
Even humans.
And even us. In all our diversity. The platypus, yes. The platypus, the anteater. There's a Sandy Patty song. I can't remember if she wrote the lyrics or not, but it starts out about how God could have made the world black and white and we'd have never known. But instead, there's all this vibrancy of color. Yeah. Well, enough for today. Like I said, next week we'll dig into Patton, and in 2 weeks, if this one seems a little too funny, Elaine reminds us that in 2 weeks we'll have a real tearjerker with places in the heart, so you can come back for that as well.